Welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Well, welcome back to It's an Inside Job, and thank you for joining me for another week and allowing me to be part of your week. As you know, on this show, we explore the subject and the topics of equanimity, resilience, and well-being. And we travel down these roles by exploring the experiences, the stories, and the skills of our varied guests on this show. And this week, I have a returning guest, Mark Siles. Now, Mark is a seasoned executive and expert in strategic leadership and individual group transformation processes. With a passion for developing high-performance teams that drive innovative leadership capabilities to accelerate growth, Mark has accumulated over 5,000 hours of coaching experience with clients from more than 25 nationalities, making him a true global leader in the field. Now, you can go back to the first episode I had with Mark back in Season 3, Episode 26, where we talked about the growth mindset and what that means and how does that show up, sort of nuts and bolts, looking at the skills. But in this week's episode, we will be exploring the transformative power of leadership and understanding how to develop high-performance teams through a strategic framework. Mark will share his insights on what it takes to be an effective leader in today's high-dynamic environment, offering valuable tips based on his extensive experience. Well, without giving too much away, just to whet your appetite, we will be talking about a couple of things, such as diving into the distinction between transactional and transformational leadership, uncovering the key elements that leaders must pay special attention to if they want to develop their transformational leadership capabilities. Furthermore, we'll be exploring the impact of thinking beyond the individual leader and focusing on developing a leadership team, trying to discover how this approach can enhance performance and foster growth within team dynamics. And so those are just a couple of points that we dive into in this insightful episode. So if your curiosity is piqued as to how to build equanimity, resilience, and well-being within yourself as an individual or a team or as a leader, well, I think this episode is for you. So now let's slip into the stream with my second episode with Mark Siles.
First of all, thanks for having me again with you. It was a pleasure the last time, so I'm very happy to be talking to you again. I think the last time we talked about this VUCA environment, where we find ourselves at the moment, you know, VUCA standing for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And there is something maybe that is like something new from the past, you know, where changes were happening in a lower pace, and it was a bit easier to forecast the future. Now we are not in that type of situation. So we're in a very dynamic business landscape. And effective leadership is not just about managing tasks anymore, but also about inspiring and empowering others to reach new heights. And in a way, like, you know, in a high level, transactional leadership, and this is what I've seen practiced the most, to be honest, and it's okay, but I don't think it's good enough to take the teams and companies through the kind of transformations required now in the upcoming years ahead, as you were mentioning. And this is so because, you know, this transformational, the transactional leadership, sorry, it's more focused on just on controlling, challenging, and basically improving the ways of working, processes, and so on. And on the other hand, what we call transformational leadership challenges more and develops our ways of thinking. It's more about the mindset. It's about helping people to go that extra mile, not just from the transactional point of view, but also in the way that they see and perceive things and work together as a team. And basically provides, I think, a very powerful framework, the transformational leadership that combined with the transactional creates a very positive and powerful momentum for change and also drives extremely good results. So I'm not saying here that it's either or, two different type of leadership styles, but I think it's about learning to manage and balance them, you know, from which kind of situations and moments we need to be more of a transactional leader, and for which moments we need to spend more time being a transformational leadership. And that's something important that I've been told a lot by my customers, that they feel comfortable with this framework, because it allows them to navigate through what is needed the most. Because sometimes we have to be more transactional, but we cannot forget about the transformational part. That's what creates more traction and motivation around teams and employees.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's not either or. It's not light switch. I think it's a spectrum. And depending upon the situation or the events that a team is facing, you might have to shift gears. You might have to slide along this sliding scale between transactional leadership to transformational leadership. Because, you know, in crisis, for me, in that sense, that's when you need transactional. Maybe that's when you need to just keep firing and be on all sort of to be quick and agile in that sense. And if when time allows, when you have time to reflect, and this allows us to think broader perspective, and maybe have a more transformational type of conversation than a transactional if we were just trying to solve a quick problem over Zoom.
No, I was just going to elaborate. I think you said mentioned a couple of things that have taken some images in my mind. And, you know, when I think about transactional leadership, as you said, you know, sometimes it is needed, and especially good for trying to solve when certain critical elements, crises and problems come up very fast, and you need quick solutions. And I see that a bit being like a chess master when we're in that type of mindset, when we are kind of strategically maneuvering the chess pieces to achieve predefined objectives. So there's not like many room for innovation or talking or communicating too much, but it's more about executing. So each move is calculated, each move has clear consequences and so on. And when we are with this type of mindset on transactional, let's call it transactional mindset or transactional leadership mindset, I think we are operating based on this give and take relationship with the team, setting focus on setting clear expectations and those goals that we have in mind of what I want to achieve, especially engaging with these task-related interactions you were talking. So, and it's more about providing rewards and corrective actions when we see that the performance is as we were expecting it, or is not helping us achieving these predefined targets. So, you know, it's about short-term objectives, maintaining stability, and you know, current systems. It doesn't challenge the status quo, and it ensures that those tasks are completed efficiently accordingly to the standards we have in mind. So it's very operational. Let me put it in a different way. Maybe it's easier to relate to something much more operational.
And if we dive a little more into the transactional leadership, you know, what scenarios or contexts do you believe transactional leadership might be more suitable or effective than transformational leadership?
I mean, they're very useful. There is what we can call left to right and right to left way of, you know, way to build visions and ambitions. And the left to right, it's when, especially when we need to have very good bases to work on, to build solid operations, and especially when we need to make sure that processes are developing in high quality standards, where we want, once the goals have been defined, and it's more about following up and making sure that the tasks get completed. So I would call it like it's more like traditional management. And when I say left to right, it's when basically when we know what the solutions are going to be. It's more about when things can be predicted, when there's no uncertainty or very little amount of uncertainty in the future, and more or less we can plan ahead. So once the plan has been done and has been created, we can basically execute on it. We don't need to review that plan. That's why I call it from left to right. So it's more like a traditional waterfall process. Then it's totally okay, because it's more about deciding and just doing it. But then when we have situations when we are not sure about which are the solutions, or situations where the full team is not seeing that vision, or has not been there's not a full buy-in in the team, or it has been created only by one individual. So we need everybody to be aligned and to be on the same place, and we need to explore different solutions. It's more about having that innovative mindset to start to try, you know, have this trial and error and explore different alternatives. And that's what I call from right to left. It's when you have to start defining that vision and thing you want to achieve together, co-creating that future vision, and then start to kind of reverse engineer how do we get there. which are the steps we need to follow to start to get there without understanding or knowing what is the exact plan, that's when transactional leadership is not gonna help you at all. But it's needed for these other type of situations when more or less, you know, like basic operations and executing short-term plans, then it's very, very beneficial.
So could you develop further into the sort of the key elements a leader must pay special attention to if they want to develop their transformational leadership capabilities? Because I think most of us can default to transactional. It's quite nuts and bolts. It's
more tangible.
Yeah, exactly. When you're talking about transformational, I think there you need to be a little more visionary. You need to be more sort of horizon oriented. Could you speak more to that? Transformational leadership and some of the capabilities we need to focus on.
Sure. I would like you to think about, like, for example, the role of a symphony conductor, right? And if you think about it, in an orchestra, the conductor plays a central role in harmonizing many different instruments to create this beautiful symphony. So they orchestrate diverse talents, abilities with their team. They need to understand which are the strengths and weaknesses of each team member. And they have to be able to blend them into this harmonious collaborative whole, if you want to call it in a beautiful way. So the only thing they do, basically, they hold this inspiring baton, I think it's called in English, to kind of lead the orchestra. And by doing that, they motivate and they unite the team members. And basically, they encourage each other to play the unique part and contribute to the overall success of the orchestra. So it's not about how good the individual is, but it's more about the overall, right? So it's extremely important that he makes people feel united into the ultimate purpose of creating this beautiful final piece of art. And basically, that's what transformational leaders do. They inspire, they motivate their team members by creating this very compelling future vision. You know, when they talk about it, everybody feels that they want to be part of this long-term journey. They encourage a lot of personal growth. They are very good coaches and mentors. And basically also they foster this positive work culture to promote employee engagement. So it's a lot about behaviors. It's about making sure that everybody's aligned on this shared vision, that they can co-create and participate working with it. And also they spend a lot of time building strong relationships. And maybe this is one of the most difficult things for leaders that I have noticed, because this is what they call the fluffy stuff. Right? You know, they have to talk about emotions. They have to talk about psychological safety. You know, I want to elaborate a bit further about psychological safety a little later on. And because there is not the one way to do it. There's not a process to do this type of development. They feel very uncomfortable. It is not something that they can fully control and put in boxes. And this is one of the biggest challenges, how to become this more on-the-go, on-the-fly, intuitional leader that helps also not just navigating on the tasks, but also through the fluffy stuff. And usually I divide, you know, when I'm helping teams developing transformational leadership, we divide this in four, to make it a bit more simple, I divide this in four different blocks. One is how do we divide our capabilities around, you know, this what I call vision for the future. And this is basically what I said before. You know, how do we communicate this compelling and exciting vision for what we want to achieve? And how can we be inspiring? Not just explaining what it is, but becoming inspiring for others that they want to follow us, also even co-creating that future vision together, and being very very confident that we will achieve those goals. This is very important when we are talking about the vision for the future to our teams, that they see this inner level of confidence. Because if we are not speaking, you know, excuse my French, if we are bullshitting the audience, they will perceive it. So we need to lead by example, believe and be confident that we will achieve, not that we may achieve, but we will achieve that vision. And at the end of the day, becoming this beacon, this guiding light of inspiration and motivation for the team. So that would be the first block of what I call vision for the future. The second block, it's about communication and engagement. This is our role as trust builders and fostering psychological safety at the core of our approach. This is very, very important. And to do that, we need to be able to go beyond the self-interest of what our career it is about and our curriculum, but act more about with the benefit, you know, keeping in mind the benefits of the team, acting with integrity, instilling pride among the team members, and creating this sense of purpose and commitment. So it's very important to act with integrity, demonstrating, you know, talking about our values, our beliefs, putting them into practice, and then also considering the ethical consequences of our decisions. Because one of the downsides of transactional leadership is that I've seen many leaders justifying the actions just because of the results. And this is very dangerous because you can basically justify whatever you want, right? And we need to be able to align those that personal side of ethical principles, moral and values into what we are doing. Otherwise, you know, we can create extremely dangerous situations. And in the past, we have seen many business cases, especially during the 80s and 90s, where some companies were just not practicing this type of alignment with ethical principles. And then we have seen through via financial collapses, or I recall one business case, how was it called, the car, Ford Pinto, that they had a goal to create this very cheap car for $2,000, and then they created a two-scene petrol tank. And then what happened, that upon a small accident, the car was exploding, just because nobody was taking into consideration the ethical principles about taking shortcuts to be able to create that ultimate car they wanted to create. So this ethical side is extremely important on how we communicate and engage with our teams. The third one, it's what I call decision-making and critical thinking. And this is one of the main benefits that as a leader you can practice with your team, those that are listening, that are leading teams. And it's maybe the most difficult one, to be honest. And it's just the one that we need to make sure that we embrace diverse perspective, and we encourage this innovative thinking by helping the team to listen to each other. This is not about being able to be the right one or who has the best idea, but it's about how can we help them seeking different viewpoints. If somebody has a different opinion than you, how can you be more curious about what it means instead of like trying to fight for who's right and who's wrong? Because it's in this diverse thinking, in different opinions, where the value is. If everybody talks what everybody knows and what everybody agrees, avoiding conflict and different opinions and not being interested in each other's views, there's not much value you can get out of it. So this critical thinking leads to this high-quality decision-making we are looking for, and fosters also this culture of continuous improvement. So how can we help the team to be better listeners and create this 360 overview into the discussions and critical thinking? It's extremely, extremely important. And the last role, or the last box of a transformational leader, it's how we become, you know, what is called develop and empower others. And this is like, you know, a transformational leader must understand the significance of investing this time on putting the time and the money to help the team's growth and development, acting as coaches, as mentors, providing guidance and support individuals to grow as well professionally, but also as human beings. And this is very important because it creates this collective growth environment that people feel recognized and appreciated by the efforts. And I think the last time also we talked about ensuring the right fit between the individuals, the roles, and the performance. And this means not just to address when somebody is not performing accordingly, but it's also when they are not a good fit for the culture. What can you do to help them being a better fit for the kind of teams and the kind of culture you want to build? And as well, like making sure that they're in the right role. So when we can develop the capability to do those four things, be good at having this compelling vision for the future, communicating and engaging with the team, helping them with the decision making and critical thinking, and focus on develop and empower others. These are the capabilities that will allow any leader to enhance or hone the transformational leadership capabilities.
So if we look at these four boxes, these four disciplines per se, I mean, each of them is intricate and necessary to create transformational leadership. The two ones that come down to me that are like really kind of stand out for me that I could see being part of the day-to-day. The first one, developing capabilities, having a long-term vision or a compelling future. I can see that as you return constantly to that, but that's not sort of a day-to-day thing. But what really I see is important, sort of the nuts and bolts of keeping a team together towards transformational leadership, is two things. You said communication engagement, where you talk about psychological safety, where we think not just about the me, my own self-development, but about the team, the collective, the cohesiveness that holds us together. And as you said, to act with integrity and ethical principles. But what I'd like to do is dive into the third one, first of all, when it comes to decision-making, critical thinking. Because I think this is going to be so important, at least in North America right now. And it's a trend that I do not personally like. And you can see this in universities, and you can sometimes see this in teams that talk about, you know, when they talk about inclusiveness and all these type of diversities. I think it's so important. But the problem is, I think the pendulum has swung, Mark, too far to the right, where everyone is worried about offending other people.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can't have critical thinking, if you can't challenge each other without worried about some walking on eggshells or the delicate flower going off in the room because he or she's going to feel offended, then I think you're creating a team that is not... it's not responsive. It is not resilient. There's no equanimity in that team. So how do we get above and beyond this? What is your experience where we can get people to be direct yet diplomatic, not to offend someone, but to be firm but fair? How do we create this critical thinking? How can we come back to where perhaps we were before all of this wokeness, if I can use it for a lack of a better term?
Extremely good question. And I notice the same. You know, every time it's becoming more and more difficult to have those tough conversations just because everybody is too concerned and too worried about offending somebody. And that's extremely, you know, that's a beautiful thought. And we have to do that. You know, it's always important to be respectful. But then we need to reframe what conflict means. And because conflict has become this kind of thing to avoid. And I think that is one of the main dangers. And people need to understand, and one of the main things that I work with teams is to, let's go deeper into what conflict means and why conflict has extremely positive sides. So let's differentiate. There's a lot of research behind this one. So usually I pull all this research that starts differentiating about what is the relationship conflict and task conflict. Let's just start to, you know, to separate the two sources of conflict, because the one we want to avoid is the relationship conflict. That is the one that gets personal. The ones that right away you will not criticize the task and look for solutions, but you criticize the person. Or he or she's an incompetent, or they are, you know, up for the task, or they don't have the right capabilities to do this or that. So that's not the kind of conflict we are talking about to get comfortable with. But the right conflict to get comfortable with is the one that allows me to say, if Jason, if I think that you're not performing up to the task, or other way around, that I can have the freedom to come to you, or the safetiness to come to you and challenge how things are done. And at the same time, you for being receptive enough to start to be curious about what do I mean, not to justify why you did certain thing or certain way, but being interested on why do I see it in that certain way by asking questions. And that's the first skill that I work with teams. It's not about giving feedback. It's about two things. It's about active listening, which means that learning to listen with all the senses, not just with your ears, but how do you put in practice more than active listening, the empathic listening part, and as well, how can we master the art of question making? How can be really, really, really good at making questions to decode what you're telling me? Because, you know, our minds, as you know, you're an expert on this topic, Jason, our minds are kind of black boxes wonders. And they have like hundreds of different type of filters that we distort reality. You know, it's extremely complex how many thoughts per second we get in our heads, and we have to simplify things when we communicate. So there's a lot of hidden assumptions, which are very dangerous in our way of talking. And by learning to make this type of questions, which are not traditional questions, they are this different type of questions, we can decode what the other person is trying to tell us. So when we become extremely good empathic listeners, and we are masters of question making, somehow something magic happens in the team. Then people start to feel, you know, it's not, how to say that? It's like when you're watching a movie, scary movie or something like that, right? You watch an action movie. You still feel something, but it's happening outside. So emotionally, it affects you a little bit, but you can control it. That's what I'm trying to say. When you're inside the movie, it's very hard to control those emotions and deal with the situation. So those kind of skills allows you to be outside the movie. and be able to have those constructive conversations without engaging emotionally and creating this emotional conflict in the team. But it's more about task conflict. So when people see task conflict as something positive, as this friction that will help the team to polish differences, find a solution and move on, so having this solution mindset and being solution oriented, then suddenly after the team practices those skills, it seems that things start to move on, because they do understand what is the purpose at the end of the day, to put those pink elephants on the table that I call, and I start to talk about them. It's not about finding somebody to blame, but make sure that we find a solution to move on. So there's more commitment to go through these conversations. It doesn't mean that they are easy. They always feel uncomfortable. And that's the other side of this one, that we need to be okay feeling uncomfortable. Because at the end of the day, Jason, you know, if you don't like the heat, don't be a chef in the kitchen. Period. there's going to be heat.
In part one of the episode, we explored the powerful impact of combining transformational and transactional leadership styles to drive positive change within organizations. Mark, an experienced leadership expert, shed light on the unique attributes of each style and how finding the right balance between them can lead to exceptional results. Transactional leadership, likened to a strategic chess game, thrives in critical situations where quick problem solving is crucial. This style prioritizes execution, setting clear expectations, and rewarding performance. However, we learned that when faced with unclear visions or a lack of team buy-in, transactional leadership may encounter challenges. On the other hand, transformational leadership, described by Mark as a maestro conducting a symphony, inspires a shared vision among the group. It fosters engagement, it fosters and encourages innovation, and acts as a mentor and coach for team members. Creating psychological safety and building relations are fundamental aspects of this leadership approach, which may challenge operational and transactional type leaders used to structured environments. Mark divided transformational leadership into four key blocks: developing a compelling future, effective communication engagement, ethical decision making, and empowering team members. Each block presented unique challenges and opportunities for growth, emphasizing the importance of active listening, empathy, and the art of asking questions to foster a culture of continuous learning. We also explored the critical distinction between relationship conflict and task conflict. In order to deal with conflict directly and diplomatically, we learned that there are two critical skills to navigate conflicts effectively. The first is active listening, and that means active listening with all of our senses, not just our ears, and being empathic listeners. This enables us to observe situations objectively and to disentangle ourselves from emotions. Second, mastering the art of asking questions allows leaders to approach conflicts with curiosity and to facilitate productive resolutions. In part two of my discussion with Mark, we will delve deeper into the practical applications of transformational leadership and explore strategies to overcome its challenges, ultimately driving exceptional team performance. Because at the end of the day, teams that are robust, resilient, and based on equanimity, well, this means that transformational leadership is at the heart of these skills. So join me now as we slip back to the stream with my interview with Mark Sines. If we got really nuts and bolts here, Mark, just to challenge you, if we have a team of, let's say, 8 people, and a couple of people are on the more sensitive side, they are more of, they become easily offended. Even if you're talking about a task conflict, you're talking about a task, but everything you talk about with them, they take personally. It always becomes about them. What do you recommend to a leader? I mean, do you have to rewind and come back down to the fundamentals of questioning, active listening? Or do you have to sometimes re-engage by understanding, okay, people, we need to reestablish the rules of engagement here? I mean, what is from your expertise and your experience?
But when this happens, there is 2 levels of actions you need to keep in mind. One is, you know, you are pointing a very good direction, which is, you know, how do you set team norms on these rules of engagement and so on, and they help. to be able to have a conversation in the team about, okay, when conflict comes up, let's start to predefine some norms. How do we want to handle conflict? How are we going to act? How do we want to give feedback to each other and so on? And then for people to be able to put on the table, how does it feel for them to experience feedback? Why for some people it's more difficult than others? So just by the fact to talk about it and understanding each other's reactions and be open and transparent that, hey, you know, for example, like I had some people when we have these conversations, so people said that, I don't know why, I take everything personal. It's part of me. So if you see me reacting like that at the beginning, just leave me a few minutes and then I'm going to be okay. So by allowing that conversation and set those norms for people to express how they experience those situations, it will help the team a lot. And then at the same time, to complement this kind of interventions, workshops, or whatever you want to call to develop the team, then it's also important for those individuals that find it more difficult to deal or take things more personal, then they need to have also, and parallelly, this personal coaching and this personal development tracks when they have to increase the level of self-awareness. Most of the time, what you're indicating, it's a lack of self-awareness. It's a lack of understanding about my true self. And having this unneeded need to defend an ego, that it's just a constructed figure made of, you know, just fictional expectations. So also by helping this person dig deeper into their personal self, helping them to grow as a human being, not just as a professional, it will help them for sure. I've seen this happening, you know, I have over 5,000 hours of coaching during the last years, and I've seen, you know, tremendous breakthroughs just by working, be able to work one-on-ones with people, helping them to become more aware, especially of their inner dialogue. Let me put it in a simple way, because most of this taking it personal, Jason, it doesn't happen. You cannot take things personal if that little voice in your mind doesn't tell you that it's personal. And most of us are not aware about how those voices in our mind are behaving and talking to us. And sometimes I talk about this too. I don't know, have you heard the story about the two wolves that we all have in our mind? You know, one of those wolves is empowering, is very collaborative, it's focused on the higher purpose, the higher will, and it's extremely positive and beneficial. And the other wolf that we have inside is that selfish one. The one that is more damaging, is more that takes things personal, the one that is more destructive and takes us to places that are pretty dark and nasty. And sometimes I ask people, like, okay, which wolf is gonna win into this fight? And they tell me, they choose one or the other. I'm like, well, and I say, like, well, it depends the one that you feed the most. And most of us, we are not aware about which wolf are we feeding. And by becoming self-aware about how we are feeding our voices in our mind, and what can we do, which strategies we can develop to get into deeper contact with those voices, because it doesn't matter how much you try them, you cannot control, you know, they are there. You cannot avoid that they come up, but you can do a lot to to decide which one you want to listen. How do you want to interact with them? So, and you know, this is something we spend a full day, yeah? You know, we take these voices. It's pretty fun exercises. We give them shapes. We draw them. We draw those two voices, the parasite, what I call the parasite, which is more the destructive one, and the empowering voice, which is this positive wolf. We draw them. We give them names, nicknames. We draw what they are saying. And then we have this kind of big theater play. We talk to them. It becomes very fun. But in a way, we are giving tools to people to deal with those voices. Because as I said, you cannot avoid, there's a purpose why they are there. They help us navigating through life. But we can do a lot to engage with the dialogue and decide which one do we want to pay attention to and avoid that they drive our cars. This is about deciding, you know, you have a car with these two voices. So you need to decide which one of those voices, that voice is your co-pilot, which one is behind the car. And you hear the voice, but you don't listen to it. And the co-pilot, you listen to the instructions. But the worst thing that can happen, and this is the last thing I will say about this topic, Jason, the worst thing that can happen, and I've seen it happening over and over again, is when people, they let the parasite voice drive the car. They're not the passenger anymore, they're driving your car, and then you became the back passenger. You're screwed then. That's when people start to go into those places that you were describing of taking things personal and not being able to collaborate into the solution, but just defending themselves and becoming very defensive on the situation. So I think it's just a pure lack of self-awareness, and there's a lot we can do to help individuals. But then we need to become more of a coach or get external help.
And I think it comes back to the root of this question that I asked, is like, how does a leader deal with someone like someone who is a little more on the sensitive side and it takes things personal. I think it actually, that's when sometimes maybe the leader, he or she themselves, they've got a large team to do and they've got a complex job and they may not have the time. And I think that's when hiring an external professional coach of your caliber becomes very important, because then you can offload some of that heavier work. And it is a lot of heavier work to help someone to become self-aware, but it's not a cost, it's an investment, because the dividends of having an external coach that can help that one particular person understand their self-talk and their narratives, or the wolves, as you've called it, once they become self-aware of that, then they can understand the trip-up mechanisms. Because at the end of the day, I have always thought that the human operating system is driven by thoughts. And thoughts drive our emotions, they drive our behaviors and our attitudes. I mean, just to come back, that's why I actually named my company Mind Talk. Because I understand from my clinical and corporate experience that at the end of the day, it's the self-talk, the mind talk that drives everything within us. And most of the time, and I think you said it so eloquently, most of the time we're not even aware of the bloody narrative we're telling ourselves. And sometimes we're telling ourselves a parasitic narrative, as you've defined it. And if it's a narrative that is not helping us, it'll just drive us down a darker hole. And maybe that's what we're talking about. Some people become oversensitive because they're just not self-aware, and that we don't understand that the people around us are not criticizing us as individuals, but they're giving us feedback about the task, about the performance. And it's not a slight on us as people, but maybe it is our performance. And maybe we have to be big boys and big girls and to take that feedback, mm-hmm. that well-meant feedback, and actually look at it instead of taking everything as offended. Because anyone who walks through life thinking that I should not be offended, well, how privileged are you? You know, it's like life doesn't work like that. If you're going to work in a corporation or be part of a team or be part of a group, I think that is part of what comes back to another point you said, is psychological safety. And so if we can segue into that, because I think that is a very important element in order to have these tough conversations. How do you define psychological safety, Mark? And how important is it?
One thing, just before I go there, one comment about what you said. No, like I don't know if you have noticed yourself, but I noticed that most of the times, or not always, but most of the time what I've noticed in my practice is that those that get most offended about how other people criticize them, they seem to be extremely good at criticizing others. and that's something that it's always back my mind. And when I'm asking them, like, hey, why are you criticizing so much others if it feels so personal for you? Like, I don't know, but my intentions are good. I want to help them. I'm like, well, could it be that the others are also trying to help you as well? But anyway, that is just a common aside. But yeah, just going back to your question about psychological safety, and this is quite important because, to be honest, it's a topic that has been discussed a lot lately. And it's a bit too fluffy at some time, because psychological safety, I think, has been misunderstood many times. So let me tell you what is not. Psychological safety doesn't mean to say whatever the heck it's in your mind. And I've seen that misunderstanding a lot. When people start to watch some TED Talks about it, and it's about, you know, pointing mistakes and be able to speak up. Of course, it's about that one. But keep in mind the purpose, because sometimes just with the excuse to develop psychological safety in teams, I've seen people just to be able to, you know, just to even insult others. Oh, but, you know, I'm speaking up. You know, I can say whatever I want. Like, no. It's not about that one. Psychological safety is about creating environments where people feel safe to challenge the status quo and how things are being done, with the mindset not just to criticize things, but also to come with solutions. That, hey, Jason, you are my boss. I noticed that we have been doing this in this way. I think that there's better ways to do this. Can I share with you my vision about how we can do that? That, hey, I noticed that last week there was an almost a near accident in the plant that we are having, and somebody almost got killed. Had a small accident, and this time only got a finger cut, but could have got the whole hand cut. So we need to talk about it. So it's for the first level that I talk about psychological safety, is that how to create a platform that people feel comfortable having those difficult conversations with the purpose to find a solution. not to point at the mistake, because it's very easy to point fingers, right? And I start to say, okay, hey, this is wrong, I don't like this. And what are you going to do about it? What can we do about it? Something I learned in Japan, I was working there for a few years on a few projects, and somebody told me, like, you know why, Mark, in Japan we point with four fingers? I'm like, why? And because if you point with one finger, there is three fingers pointing back at you. so don't point at what's the wrong thing, because at the end of the day, you are also part of the problem and part of the solution. So that's one of the things that it means to me. Be able to speak up with the mindset and the purpose to find solutions, with the purpose to point at things, to be able to create something that will avoid that to happen in the future. And that's how these future-proof companies are created, by creating these platforms where people feel safe enough to come and put those pink elephants on the table with the purpose to find solutions. The second side of it, of psychological safety, is people are not afraid to make mistakes, but linked to the learnings that you need to, or like the skills and capabilities you need to develop to cover those gaps that you identified in the previous dimension. What do I mean by that? Is that when you point, and most of the time when you point at problems or things that are happening or things that need to be solved, sometimes you do have all the answers, but sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have to try new things, you have to experiment, you have to learn new skills and capabilities. So psychological safety for me also means that you have environments that, yes, it's okay to point at what's wrong and to find solutions, but it's also okay to make mistakes when you're trying to solve those things, with the whole mentality to, okay, it didn't work, now let's try a different way, let's try a different approach. What do we need to learn in order to get there? How can we enhance our team so we can avoid this to happen again, and so on? So it is learner mindset as well. The growth mindset that Carol Dweck calls it, right? Where you focus more on what do I need to do? What can I do? I don't have the answer yet. So how can we get there? So that's part of the psychological safety framework as well. Being able to explore and learn new things. And the last part that I talk about when I talk about psychological safety, it is also our capabilities to have these difficult conversations. And I mentioned that before. That's part of psychological safety, to be able to discuss mistakes, but with this purpose to have this, how do we understand each other's opinions? How do we learn to make questions? How do we learn to listen and so on? So this is, how do I feel comfortable to give you feedback? And, have this fruitful conversation together. So this is the last element where I think that people feel inclusive. You know, we're talking about inclusivity. I think that this is exactly what's helping creating inclusivity and the feeling of purpose in the team, when people feel okay to have this initial friction and conversations and so on. So that's what psychological safety means for me. When I can see in teams that they have these elements of being able to talk and point at mistakes, being solution focused, they focus on developing this growth mindset, and also feel comfortable to have these difficult conversations and give feedback to each other with the purpose to help each other to grow. That's what it means to me. Otherwise, if it's only about speaking up and complaining and pointing fingers, I don't think that is the right way to develop a psychologically safe environment.
No, I mean, that's just an abusive, aggressive kind of environment. You need to put some filters on. And that's why I always kind of encourage the philosophy of being direct, but diplomatic, being firm, but fair. Because I think all the elements you talk about, psychological safety, is so important. Especially, I mean, one thing is genders or different ages, but a lot of the teams that I've worked with, and obviously, Mark, you've also have a lot of international experiences, these multicultural, multinational teams that can be spread over global. And of course, there are cultures and there are different ways of thinking that just are influenced, a part of that background make of that individual, all the individuals on a team that tend to be multicultural and multinational. And I think it's always important when we're talking about psychological safety, it's to come back to the norms, as you've called it, to the teams, or creating rules of engagement. What do we expect on the teams? It's to address the elephant in the room. Look, folks, we all come from different cultures and we have all different ways of communicating. And sometimes, being a North American or a Canadian, we tend to be very direct and get to the point, where other cultures tend to take it more slowly, right? And there's no right or wrong here, but I concur with you that by coming back to the norms of what do we expect for this team, what are the rules of engagements for this team so we can create an environment where we can have constructive conflict, we can address performance or task issues, where we can create psychological safety and understand that everybody is well meant and that we need to be a little more self-aware of us selves as a me or the we of the team in order for us to move things forward, to move things towards the horizon. I mean, is this something along your philosophy? I'm assuming it is, because from what, everything you said, that it kind of overlaps with a lot with my thinking.
And this is, once again, this loops back to the transformational leadership topic, because this is where transformational leaders lack the most, because this is uncomfortable. You know, and even if we work with this on a daily basis, Jason, I don't know for you, but every time I do an intervention, it is uncomfortable. People see, you know, that I'm having fun or something because they see me smiling, but said, hey, I'm not smiling because I'm having fun. I'm smiling because of the beauty of the process, of how proud I am to see you guys in the team be able to discuss and seeing you, you know, this morning you didn't come along and now you go for dinner together. That's why I'm smiling, because it makes me proud to see what you, you know, what you're putting yourself through. And yeah, it feels uncomfortable. But as I said before, hey, you know, leaders that are listening, once again, I'm going to repeat myself now. If you don't like the heat, don't want to be the chef in the kitchen just because it looks good in your curriculum. And this is so important part what you're talking now, Jason, that if a leader doesn't develop or the acceptance, be brave, that, hey, this is something I will have to do, or get some help, be humble, and then just say, hey, I cannot, this is uncomfortable, I cannot do it myself, I'm going to get some support from the outside with coaches like us. You know, if they cannot do that, they will be able to be good, but they will never be able to develop these amazing high-performance, awesome teams that they want to stay with you. You can still have high-performance team with fear and pushing them with all, you know, with threats and other. We've seen many companies practicing that, but I just don't believe on that ethical part, because I don't see being sustainable. I don't see being aligned with what society and our future-proof human being, you know, future as human beings needs. I don't see this, how this will help us developing well-being, an environment of health. And that's why, even if some companies achieve a lot, I just don't believe on it. I don't think it helps society as a whole. And we need to keep that in mind as well. This is not just how can we make money for our stakeholders and shareholders. This is about how can we create a better future society for everybody, to, for our kids to experience the kind of well-being we would like to experience ourselves. So this is quite transcendental for me. It's quite personal, because I care a lot as well on the legacy we leave behind. And which kind of cultures are we developing by creating leaders that only focus on the tasks and pushing and threatening people around, making people asleep. I don't want to mention now leaders, but famous leaders, but making people sleep at the office overnight. I mean, what the heck is that? And some people even thinking that this is normal, keeping people away from their families at night. I mean, this is just crazy, the kind of future we are creating for our kids. And that's why this is also not just a job for me. It becomes so important thinking about the legacy we leave behind. Now see, I'm getting a bit emotional about this, because it's very, very, very important for me.
No, but I understand. You've spoken in some of your articles in our pre-conversation about the maturity of a leadership team. And it's understanding at what level does the team reach a level of maturity where you can have hard conversations, where you can have psychological safety, but you can be direct and diplomatic in how you address each other.
But correct.
What would you say are the markers? Because for me, is that just a little side note, sometimes a leadership team, that they themselves have been around each other for months, if not years, and there's a certain dance, a certain rhythm, a certain pattern in their interaction. And like most of us, once we know someone, we tend to fall into that pattern of interaction. So sometimes to shake things up is to bring in an external coach of your caliber and your competence to come in, because what happens when you bring a new element in, and it's in a professional environment, everyone's going to put on their best face. They're going to put on their best mask. And what does that mean? Well, because of this new element, you've broken up the pattern of relationship in this leadership team, because all of a sudden you have this unknown element and everyone wants to be at their best. And that can reset the dynamics of the team to address some of these transformational things, bringing someone like you or myself or whoever that, and then guess when everyone's on their best behavior, then we can start thinking about, we can become more self-aware as individuals or as a team, as, okay, What do we need to recalibrate here? What can we keep that is working well for us? But what do we have to look at behavioral-wise, communication-wise, collaboration-wise that we need to reset and recalibrate? And so I just want to bring that element in, because sometimes a leader's thinking, you know, they're at their wits' end. It's like, I don't know what to do. And maybe she or he has done all that they can do, but now it's time to bring in some support, some extra help, something, an external element. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. And that's what I've experienced.
And with that awareness.
That awareness you're saying now is so, so important, that before you start to do anything, and this is just, you know, it is so because it's just how our brains are designed. Before we start to do anything, we need to be aware and understand why this is important in an emotional level, and what's, you know, more than what's going to happen when we succeed at this, what could happen if we don't do this? I think I like more the second question, because it's very, you know, just by finding benefits, it's like, you know, you say to somebody, okay, which are the benefits of a stop smoking? They will tell you a lot of benefits, but then if that's so clear, why are people still smoking? But when you start to talk to them about what could happen if they don't stop, then it creates a different type of conversation, right? It becomes more engaging with your personal values and beliefs and what you want for yourself. So this initial awareness is not always there. And that's why this is always my initial point. And I'm utilizing a self-developed method that measures in a team and individual levels. It breaks it down in 18 different, you know, those four blocks in 18 different questions. And then it creates a measurement for not just the person, but the whole team. Where are we? In our level of maturity, in transformational leadership, where are we? And this is not just about answering how do we see each other, but it includes a whole 360 perspective of those that work around, you know, that work with you, and they evaluate you. And that creates an initial measurement on you. For example, Jason, you would have your scores and your measurement, but the team gets their own awareness as well, how we are doing as a leadership team. And the second stage, and this is the beauty of this methodology I'm using, is that it's not about how you, Jason, can improve and become an amazing transformational leader. The goal, it's the team's. The team has a goal to reach certain number, to reach certain level in all of the dimensions. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good you are, Jason, in developing yourself. It's about the team. That's the one that is rewarded and enhanced. And what happens then? It's not just that you become more aware about yourself, but it's about the purpose of your improvement is to help the team becoming better. And then right away, when you see somebody is lacking a little bit or suffering, your initial mindset is about, okay, hey guys, because we need to improve as a team. What do you need? How can I help you? Which kind of help do I need from you? Because here I'm struggling, you're really good at this. Can you teach me? Can I teach you about this one? So suddenly the team purpose is the one that is enhanced. And if individuals are doing really well, but the team doesn't move, then we have a kind of a conversation that, hey, what's happening here? Why you are not supporting others? Why are others not asking help from you? So this initial awareness and interest, what I call the AISA flow, which stands for awareness, interest, support, and adoption, these stages are extremely important, because I've seen many teams going to adopt or act without being aware about what is the gap, where are we at the moment, how mature are we, why do we need this, you know, which kind of challenges we are facing, and then are we interested? Because as I was saying before, the example about smoking, Jason, so many people are aware that smoking is bad, but why aren't they interested? So before you like to do anything about it and to change the situation. So that's another element, that before we start doing anything, yes, we need to help the teams to be aware about the level of maturity and what is the gap between where we are today and what do we want to achieve. But as well, why should we care as a team? What's going to happen if we don't do this, and so on? So to raise this sense of urgency. And then also we're talking about being everybody engaged. And that's the third part of this flow, that is the support part. So is everybody committed? Is everybody in? Because if we are not all in, this is not going to work. And when I talk about support, when I was also been working a lot in China, and once they told me about this story of a town that had this water well that everybody was taking care of. Everybody had to roll into it, and the whole village was taking care of the well, so they could have clear and drinkable water until the new generation came came through, and then somehow they didn't care that much about having that water well taken care of until at the end of the story. It's a long story, but long story short, at the end of the story, the water well was spoiled, toxic, and nobody could drink out of that water just because people had started to worry too much about themselves and about how they wanted to spend their free time instead of taking care of that water well. And teams is the same. If everybody's not supporting the development, if everybody's not taking care of that water well to keep that water clear and drinkable, then things will become toxic at some point. So we need to have this full buy-in and commitment and cooperation to work on the team development, not just the CEO or the leader of the team. Everybody has to be responsible and feel committed to go through that journey. Then you are ready to execute a short-term plan. Then you are ready to start to do things and put that transformation into action on both dimensions, transformationally and transactionally. But if you forget about those other three stages, about being aware, interested, and having the full support, then the adoptions most of the time fail.
This transformational leadership, for a lot of people, they've maybe put their toe in the water, but they haven't migrated so far. Because it can be a long and challenging road, and there's a lot of elements to address. But if I may ask, and perhaps you've already answered this to some extent, what would be one advice to any leader that if they decide to initiate such a journey that you would share with them?
You know, I would say to this leader, most of them, not all of them, have a good strategy, a business strategy, where they kind of foresee the challenges ahead. They have their pillars, the must-win battles or guiding lights, whatever you want to call it, and they execute on that plan to try to achieve their goals. So please also develop a strategy for your team. Do exactly the same. You know, this is very important. It's not just about the business strategy, but also develop your leadership team development strategy. Get support from the outside, somebody that can help you designing that strategy. And you can start to assess that gap and then identify these potential roadblocks and challenges that you might have to, that could hinder the execution capabilities. Because most of the times, yes, your PowerPoint is going to look perfect on your business strategy, but this is just 5% of the work. 95% of the work is to assess the execution capabilities and foresee ahead what could hinder that execution. Most of the time, it is not the skills or the capabilities that the team have, but it's how the team works together to execute that strategy. So have also that on place. Have that plan to develop the team, that strategy on team development on place.
You know, I think everything that you said today in our previous episode is so important to create robust, resilient teams that feel a sense of well-being and a sense of equanimity. Because my philosophy, and it's based on my anecdotal experience working with corporations, that change is completely, we have to see this as a normal process, and that this is just something we have to think about when we think about culture or think about business strategy. We need to just think that change is in constant, things are in constant flux. When you think about the climate, when you think about AI and machine learning, when you think about geopolitical tensions and how everything is changing, that if we can accept the philosophy that change is just part of the DNA of life and that things are not good, there is no norm to go back to. It's just setting some sort of new norm constantly. And if we can accept this, then I think this creates a sense of resilience within individuals and then within teams. And for me, again, this is an anecdotal philosophy, but I find it's something that has helped me and helped a lot of the people that I work with understand this, because we create a more flexible mindset, a mindset that is better adept at change and adversity. And everything you speak to resonates with me, and because I can see a lot of overlap in what we talk about.
100% agree. And what you said now, let me build quickly on this one. The last advice is, you know, it's so good what you said now, Jason, you know, for the leaders that are listening, learn to let go, non-attachment. Because change is not up to us. It doesn't matter how much we want to fight, change is going to happen, yes or yes. There's nothing we can do to stop it. What we can do is learn to detach emotionally, learn to let go. Because without getting that emotional detachment and learn to let go, there's, you know, there will be always resistance. That's the main thing that stops us through transformation, successful transformations. We feel so attached to processes, to materials, to even like, you know, when we are at home, you know, just on a personal level, when you are doing cleaning up, it's so hard to throw things. You know, I've never needed this, but what about if I need it? This detachment is so critical. So develop that skill as a leader and then teach others as well. It's okay to change. It doesn't mean that that process was wrong or the way we are things, you know, but that they don't help us anymore to build the future. We are not future-proof anymore. So learning to, you know, to let go and to this non-attachment that I love it, that Buddhists call it, the non-attachment, non-stickiness, I think they call it. It's an amazing skill to develop. So that would be the last part of it. You know, do some research on that non-stickiness and detachment and just learn to let go. It's so healthy. Especially on the emotional level, but so difficult, huh? And I'm there as well, huh? I'm talking about it, but I find it difficult myself.
Well, Mark Siles, thank you very much for joining me for part two of our conversation. And I can already predict there's going to be a part three.
I love it. Always a pleasure talking to you, Jason. Looking forward to that.
All right, we'll speak soon. In the conclusion of this brilliant episode, Mark has provided us valuable insights into fostering a culture of psychological safety, enabling people to embrace feedback and to accept variance with open minds. Self-awareness emerges as a key factor in receiving feedback constructively. Mark highlights how individuals often defend their egos, unaware of their own internal narratives or their mind talk. Within us, there exist two voices. There's the parasitic voice and the empowering voice. Mark suggests that both serve a purpose in navigating life, but it's essential to be mindful of which one of these we feed. Nurturing the empowering voice leads to personal and professional growth. As we close out for this episode, you know, this conversation has reminded me to recognize that nurturing psychological safety, promoting self-awareness, and cultivating a culture of open feedback are fundamental aspects of transformational leadership. You know, by embracing these principles, leaders can create inclusive, supportive environments where individuals and teams can thrive and contribute to their full potential. Well, folks, I hope you've learned a lot from this episode. And a personal thank you to you, Mark, for showing up for another show and contributing your time, your experience, and your extensive knowledge on leadership. And folks, if any of you are interested in reaching out to Mark Siles, I will leave all his contact information in the show notes. If any of you have feedback, comments, or any questions for me, you will also find my information in the show notes. But thank you for showing up for another week. Until the next time we speak and the next time we talk about equanimity, resilience, and well-being, I will see you here on this channel. And until next week, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.